Hello and welcome to Asia Stream, where we track, report, and analyze the issues and interests of the world's largest region. I am Waj Khan, Nikkei Asia's digital editor here in New York City. Today's episode, Asia's Scamdemic, the age of internet predators. Many of us have fallen prey to a digital scam at some point in our lives. Online swindling has been around since the dawn of the internet, but during the COVID-19 pandemic, the problem has blown up, especially in Southeast Asia. In that region, virtual scamming has become an immensely powerful and organized industry, run by gangs from mainland China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. But here's the thing, these gangs don't do their dirty work alone. Instead, they traffic people out of nearby countries like Thailand into the loosely policed border regions in Cambodia, Laos, and Myanmar. They lure them with false job offers, then they hold those people against their will and force them to run scams until they can buy back their freedom or somehow escape. In a way, they run a physical scam to run an online scam. The numbers are astounding. Tens of thousands of traffic victims are essentially held captive right now, trapped and bound to run these operations. Thailand is the most affected country, and scam calls there increased by 270% during the pandemic. Meanwhile, Singapore, which is the region's richest country, lost the equivalent of about $468.8 million. That's half a billion bucks to these schemes last year. And law enforcement can't keep up. Not only are victims being robbed of their entire life savings, but those who are stuck doing the scamming, the ones who are trafficked, face blackmail, violence, and even death. And it's important to note that although this is primarily a Southeast Asia problem, the internet, of course, is borderless. No surprise that these scams and the networks that sustain them are already expanding beyond the region. Surely, they have the potential to reach the entire world. We've got a great episode for you today. So get ready. It's time to screen some calls. You're listening to The Sound of Asia, streaming in your ear. From Nikkei Asia, this is Asia Stream.
A reminder that Nikkei Asia is currently offering an exclusive discount for our podcast listeners. Get 3 months of our award-winning coverage for just $9. To redeem, just click the link in the episode description.
This episode is centered around a story we published earlier this month called Asia's Scamdemic, How COVID-19 Supercharged Online Crime. It was reported by Dominic Folder, who's going to be joining us in just a bit. But first, an admission. We don't cover Southeast Asia enough on this show, and this is definitely a Southeast Asian crisis. It's affecting not just the Golden Triangle countries of Myanmar, Thailand, and Laos, but also Cambodia, the Philippines, Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia. Malaysia's a big one, actually. These scam gangs often target Malaysians because they are likely to have Mandarin language skills and can be used to rip people off in China. English language skills are also highly prized in this trade of deceit. But this problem also extends further. It's creeping across the globe. Recent reports indicate that victims have been trafficked in from nearby English-speaking countries, like India and Pakistan, but also further off places like Kenya, which are nowhere near Asia. Thus, what's happening in Southeast Asia is not staying in Southeast Asia and deserves the world's attention. Before we bring in the journalist behind this investigation, we're going to hear some clips from his interview with a former scammer and then get some context for the story from our Tokyo Dispatch correspondent, Alice French, who was one of the editors who worked on this investigation for months. As usual, Asia Stream correspondent Monica Hunter-Hart will be walking us through the process. Right, let's get inside the scamdemic.
We're going to start with the story of one Thai teenager. His experience is emblematic of that of many thousands of other vulnerable young people in Southeast Asia, particularly young men, who have gotten trapped in this world of cyber slavery. The teen's name has been changed for his protection. We're calling him Kai. In the summer of 2021, Kai was unemployed. He was looking for work and responded to a job posting for developing a gaming website in Poipet, a boomtown city in Cambodia that's on the border with Thailand and is known for its casinos. Kai went across the border into Poipet, and before he knew it, he was trapped. He'd fallen into the hands of a scam gang who held him prisoner. He was repeatedly sold to different employers and forced to run scams targeting people back in Thailand. Along with his co-captives and Chinese boss, Kai conducted the scams through laptops and smartphones, sometimes posing as the relatives of the victims, sometimes policemen, and sometimes loan officers. There was one particular fake loan scheme that Kai can't forget. It involved a man who was trying to secure money to pay for medical treatment for his sick mother. Kai tricked him into handing over his entire life savings, supposedly in order to apply for a bigger loan. It was 235,000 baht, or the equivalent of over 6,500 US dollars. Here's Kai talking about it. There's a little background noise at the coffee shop where our reporter met him.
All his money was gone. What could he do to help his mother? Then he had to repay the loan after the police got involved, and he had nothing. He called me asking for the money to take care of his mother.
So Kai and his Chinese boss got on a call with him. The man was increasingly desperate. He begged them to give him back his money, turning on his camera to make a personal appeal. Kai's boss wouldn't budge and made Kai taunt the man and call him stupid for handing over all of his money. Then the man took out a gun and shot himself in the head in front of them on the camera. Kai vomited. Everything changed for him then.
That was the worst moment in my life. I felt that I wanted to go home. I don't want to see things like this. I had to rethink everything carefully. I wanted to make decisions as an adult, not as a stupid kid. That's when I decided it was better to run away. I didn't want any more of this. I wanted to escape.
And after being held against his will for 6 months, Kai did escape. His mother managed to get in touch with a volunteer rescue service, and Kai made a harrowing journey undercover to the border while hiding from Cambodian army patrols, who would have turned him into the police and sent him back to his employer. It was a short stretch of land. Normally, it takes just 15 minutes to cross, but it took Kai 2 days. The sound you're hearing now is the engine running in the van that was waiting for him. Kai emerged from the dark and went straight into his mother's arms. He hugged her and then got in the back of the van to go home.
It wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to work on a gambling site, but not to scam people.
Kai is now living in Bangkok under police protection. For some background on how and why this scamdemic has exploded recently, let's go now to Alice French, our Tokyo Dispatch correspondent who was one of the editors on this story.
Konnichiwa, and welcome to a slightly different Tokyo Dispatch. I'm glad that we're featuring our scamdemic big story in this episode, because it's been almost 6 months in the making. Before we get into it, I want to touch on why this crisis is unfolding now. The types of scams you'll be hearing about are by no means new. They've been going on for a long time. And in fact, we've covered them before. In September 2021, we ran a piece on cyber slavery in Cambodia from a different reporter, Sean Turton. It covered violence, bribery, and the dark underworld of online scam gangs. But what's changed since then is the sheer scale and frequency at which scamming is now being conducted across the region. Dominic Folder's story reveals that online scams are now so prolific along almost the entire length of Thailand's borders, not only in Cambodia, but also in Myanmar, Laos, and Malaysia, that police are unable to keep up. The story is full of accounts from law enforcement officers about how difficult it has become to keep the phenomenon under control. And the main reason for this boom in online scams is the pandemic. National lockdowns left many people with more time alone at home, spending longer on social media, and with more appetite than ever for online interaction. It's no coincidence that many of the scams mentioned in our story start with a lonely single person looking for love online at a time when meeting in person was not an option. One elderly woman from Thailand, for example, was tricked out of more than $4,000 by a man pretending to be her American lover. Pandemic-induced unemployment is also to blame. Laid off by their companies, many young people have become easy targets for fake online adverts offering loans or even jobs. Police General Titawat from Bangkok, who you can read about in the story, said that scamming's main victims used to be the elderly or housewives, but largely due to the pandemic, more youngsters are now getting dragged in by promises of quick, well-paid work, which often turns out to be in the scamming industry. So this is the crisis of the moment. COVID made the problem explode, but law enforcement fear the implications could be long-lasting.
That was Alice French, and now we are joined by Dominic Folda, who reported and wrote this story. He is a Nikkei Asia associate editor and writer. Dominic, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
So Dominic, we heard a little from Kai at the start of this episode, but tell us more generally about the people who are trafficked into this work.
It's very much a case that this is burgeoned because of COVID. So you've got this perfect storm of unemployment, people who are really in financial straits, desperate for jobs, grabbing for straws. They see these very seductive advertisements on social media, on Facebook, and you know they can get a job that will pay them over $1,000 a month and that they'll have air conditioning and lovely accommodation. So they just fall for it. And then, of course, when they get there, they're delivered by agents, usually to the border areas, smuggled across, lose their passports, and find that it's a very, very different story. And that they're quite likely to end up in a horrible dormitory, sharing a room with five other people, being fed very bad food, and being told that until they've made a certain amount of money, they're not going to be released. So they're in a very serious situation. The police that I've spoken to, the Thai police, reckon it's principally people between 18 and 31. They characterize them as not being university level individuals, but they're people who've got some technical skills, and you know they may have been to technical college, they've worked in telecoms or what have you, but they have some skills, and those are the sort of people that are most susceptible to it. And one of the bigger concerns was that the women were very vulnerable. If they said, "Oh no, I'm not going to scam," they were in serious danger, and you know, threatened with forced prostitution and all sorts of horrific things.
What was it like talking to these sources, sources like Kai and also the people who have been scammed? I imagine that people might feel a degree of shame relating to their experience, even though they're, of course, victims, and it must be kind of hard to talk about.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, people who've been scammed are embarrassed. They feel like they've been made to look very stupid, and that's not the right response. I mean, we should all be very sympathetic. Somebody has been fooled and they've been robbed, and that's awful. In the case of the ROM scams, the romance scams, a lot of the victims are elderly women, and they simply don't want to believe that the person that was so charming on the phone is actually a thief and is pocketing their money. And so they're taken for a ride. The Thai police estimate that roughly 50% of people who are scammed never report it. So we had last year official figures of about 50,000 reports of being scammed. So that would be 100,000 upward. But we're guessing, and I suspect it's much higher. But at 50%, it's a reasonable estimate. It's just not the sort of thing people walk around admitting to having done. And some of them are incredibly bizarre. I mean, there was one Thai society lady I was talking to last weekend. And the minute I mentioned scamming, she had her story like everybody else in Thailand. And she said, oh, yes, you know, her mother had been scammed. And the scam had been her brother, the mother's son, ringing up saying that he'd been involved in a traffic accident and was in hospital. And could she transfer 50,000 baht to pay for the bill, which she did to a certain account. She didn't think to check. And the next conversation she had with her son was, well, did you get the money? And he said, well, what are you talking about? And so they had somehow managed to fool the mother into thinking she was actually speaking to her own son. It's incredible stuff. And, you know, we're playing around with all this sort of technology that makes things very easy. You know, you see kids playing around, putting ears on their faces and funny noses online in their social media exchanges. But there are other apps that are just as easily available that can actually put somebody's face onto somebody else. And this has been used in the police scam so that you've got people talking to somebody who does look like a policeman who can be seen somewhere else on the internet. So as I say, it's elaborate.
And what about the people running these schemes? I kind of find them the most intriguing. Their work seems to require a complete lack of remorse. Is there a typical profile of these highest level actors?
Well, we're tapping into a large Chinese underworld. It's Chinese money that has been coming out of Taiwan, Hong Kong, mainland China. And it's a big problem for the Chinese government. This is something that they've been trying to deal with, this leeching of capital going out in different ways that they can't control. And a lot of it is connected to Macau.
Yes, just jumping in for a moment to give some context for listeners. Macau is an autonomous region in the south of China that is a global gambling hub. But the fortunes of the gambling industry there have been changing. Maybe you can explain a little bit.
So basically, pre-COVID, China was already cracking down on online gambling, and they actually asked the Cambodian authorities to get it into check. And you combine that with the anti-corruption campaigns that have been going on in China, and the whole campaign to clamp down on junkets to Macau. So basically, the financiers of the casino world have seen the writing on the wall, and they've been moving out of Macau towards mainland Southeast Asia, primarily Cambodia. Things have got more sticky in Macau, and they have spread, the casino financiers have spread their weight around Cambodia, and then they've moved up to the Thai border. But then you combine that with this whole problem of COVID keeping everybody locked down in China. So suddenly you lose all your normal punters, all the people who came to Thailand and then would go up to the borders, cross over, do their gambling in the casino, suddenly disappeared. And that's when the switch occurred. They went over to online gambling, installed all this infrastructure, telecoms, hardware. And then the penny dropped. Well, we've got this connectivity. What else can we use it for? And so that has been the great change in the last 2 years. So we have seen Chinese criminal elements, known Chinese criminal elements, go to Cambodia, purchase citizenship, which is possible for about 200,000 US, you know, give or take. It goes backwards and forwards, and recast themselves in a new light. And then they become Southeast Asian businessmen, and they will operate in the countries of the region and move around.
I want to take a step back and look at this on the country level. So regionally, you've identified this trend of Chinese gambling money moving out of Macau and into Southeast Asia broadly. And you described how scamming has been popping up alongside and been supported by online gambling infrastructure. But let's go nation by nation here for a second. So Thailand, of course, is one of the focuses of your story. It's been hit very hard. Why is Thailand at the center of this problem?
The reason is that Thailand has borders with Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar, and Malaysia to the south. And the Malaysian border has a different set of problems that we don't need to go into. But these are very wild and long borders, and they're very porous. But at the same time, on the Thai side, you've got this incredibly high quality infrastructure. So you have roads that run all the way up, dual carriageways. You would not believe the quality of the roads in northern Thailand, northeastern Thailand. But more importantly, in this context, it's a telecoms infrastructure. So you have three mobile operators in Thailand, that's DTAC, True, and AIS, and they all compete. And they all have their own cell towers all over Thailand. And AIS, which is actually owned by Temasek, the Singapore government fund, openly advertises on its website that it has border-to-border 5G coverage. So when you get up on the border, you get your mobile phone out and you find that you've got indeed 5G 4-bar reception, and that basically it's better than parts of the central business district in Bangkok. It's really quite remarkable. So Thailand is a sort of a perfect opportunity. You've got these lawless borders that are beyond the reach of law, particularly in Burma. And you've got this very immediate access, connectivity to the outside world. So they've been scamming Thailand from these bases.
It's wild to me that you can just take advantage of internet connectivity across the border like that. And I remember from your story that some of the telecom towers along Thailand's borders are actually positioned to be pointing into scamming hotspots in neighboring countries. I remember there was a photo showing a tower on the Thai side of the border that was angled towards Myanmar's KK Park casino complex. It's just wow. And we might talk about KK Park in a minute, but I want to ask, Thailand has had the most robust law enforcement response of any of these affected countries. Why is that?
Quite simply because it suffered the most. And this has really irritated people. So there was a survey that was done by the Consumer Council of Thailand about 4 months back about, you know, all the problems people are facing at the moment, you know, hard employment, inflation, just like anywhere else in the world, all the problems they're confronting. But scamming is right up there. It was, you know, in the top 10 and explicitly stated what a nuisance this was. And the Thai ID system is very sophisticated, very good, so that the Thai police would then get an idea of who was over the border and who wants to be extracted. And the Thai police have then communicated with the Cambodian police to go and raid particular places, and they've had some success getting people back in that way. This does not apply in Laos or particularly Burma, where they're just invisible. They've gone. We don't know who, how many people are over the border and where they come from. This is, it's really very frightening. I think Thailand is leading the pack. I think Cambodia is a much, much more complicated proposition. And basically, this idea that when the Thais go through relatively formal channels and say, we know these people are here, those people get handed back. And it's almost like it's a fair cop, as we'd say in English. All right, you can have these ones, because there are lots more that haven't yet been identified. So to that extent, the Cambodians do cooperate. On the other side, we have found that very senior police figures in Cambodia are involved, and the tycoons who run the casinos as fronts, if you like, are very well known. They're senators and goodness knows what, right at the top of the pile. And so it goes very high in Cambodia. And the question has to be asked, you know, what percentage of Cambodia's GDP today is coming from a combination of gambling, online gambling, and scamming? And it's going to be significant. I'm not going to put a number on it, but it's going to be significant.
Moving on to Myanmar. So, of course, this is a country that has been operated by a military regime that seized power in early 2021, and there's an ongoing insurgency in many places. To what extent is the military government responsible for this problem?
The military government has got itself into a situation where it is losing control of provincial areas, including the borders. So it does control border crossing points at Tachilek and Mayawati. These are key points. And the areas nearby are controlled by different people. It gets very, very confusing for outsiders, you know, big alphabet soup. But for the moment, those people are connected to the Burmese military. The idea that the Burmese military, with all the other problems besetting it, is also behind scamming, I don't think that flies. The important thing is that they're not in a position to do anything about it. They do not control this territory. It is beyond the reach of any law. And that's what's really very disturbing for people who get caught up in it. They have border guards, as they're called. And these are former insurgents who've done deals with the military to, you know, police those areas, and they get all sorts of economic privileges. And at the moment, that means that they're accommodating these developments. And so the connection is not direct. Does the military in Burma benefit from this? I wouldn't rule that out at all, but I don't think that's the bigger issue. The issue is that these territories are basically beyond the rule of law, any rule of law. And of course, that applies to the whole of Burma, because what we're seeing at the moment is a regime that is completely opposed by everybody in the country.
Right. You mentioned in your story how there's a specific casino complex and scam center in Myanmar that has become a real headache for Taiwan. Tell us what's going on there.
There's a particularly notorious area called KK Park that has really attracted a lot of attention in Taipei. And the problem for the Taiwanese is, as you know, they don't have embassies everywhere. They have a different system. They have representative offices. So when ASEAN embassies discover that they've got their nationals over the border and there's a problem, then they move. They start talking with the authorities in Thailand, and they go by the book and follow the rules. But for the Taiwanese, it's much more serious. They are lost, as it were, and very, very vulnerable. So some of the worst stories that we've heard are about Taiwanese.
And then, of course, there is Laos. You and I had a chat earlier about this story, and you were saying that Laos's lawlessness is often overlooked. And that's so true and also ironic because it's a third of the Golden Triangle, a region notorious for drug trafficking. It borders every single country in the Mekong region, meaning that it's a real throughway for regional illegal activity. So what is Laos's role in all of this?
Well, Laos is this sleeping giant that everybody forgets about. It's a very large, underpopulated area, very beautiful. And a lot of the activity is along the river, the Mekong, which of course is incredibly important to Southeast Asia. What the concern is, because the country is bankrupt, because they have no capital of their own, they're falling back on what is loosely called the private sector. And increasingly, it seems that that private sector is actually the criminal underworld for trafficking, wildlife trafficking, people trafficking, online gambling, you name it, it's going on there. This has been very well reported for a long time. This is not new. So I think the concern is that the government basically has no control over these areas. And the whole issue of sovereignty for sale is a huge concern. I mean, you're establishing principalities of crime, these areas that are small and toxic.
Do you have a sense of what's coming next for these scams? How might we see the situation continue to develop in the next 2 or 3 years?
I do think that the Thais will get on top of it to some degree. They're not going to solve the problem. They're never going to get rid of it. But they'll get on top of it because everybody has just got much smarter. And the police talk about cyber vaccination, which means going out and telling everybody online, don't do this. This is bad news. The regional governments are stepping up to the mark. So in Taiwan, for example, if you're heading in a certain direction, there are people with signs saying that if you've applied for a job in Cambodia, it's not a good idea to go there. You know, they are warning people. So I think the information campaign will have a benefit. But the problem, of course, is when you're sitting in Toronto and you get a phone call and you haven't got a clue about all this stuff and somebody does you in and it's happened. And of course, the great concern now is that they will go much further afield and start scamming, for example, the Chinese diaspora in North America and that kind of thing.
What can the international community do to help mitigate this?
I think the international community can look at everything, telecommunication activities, technical methods for dealing with it, tightening up the banking in Thailand. The Bank of Thailand is getting onto this now. The accounts that are used to scam people exist in every single high street bank. Every retail bank has accounts that are being used. So the Bank of Thailand, I think in August, had reported to them something like 14,000 accounts that were suspicious. But you have to put that in the big picture. And that is, this is a highly banked economy. You've got 100 million plus savings accounts for 70 million people. And there are something like 40 million banking transactions per day. And of course, it's all gone up because of COVID again, because people are buying so much more online. So there's all this technical stuff that's got to be looked at. The areas that I think will come under consideration will be things like somebody is scammed on a telephone number that's in their mobile. There should be numbers where they can ring immediately and report that it's happened so that number can be shut down.
One last thing before we go. Let's just remind listeners of what they should keep in mind to avoid being scammed themselves. What are some basic things that they should be aware of and look out for?
Well, basically, whether it's on the internet, you know, Facebook or anything, you know, any approach to you that's very friendly and unexpected, be a little bit suspicious. And if you have a moment's concern that you're being contacted by a scammer, simply switch off the connection, block them on Facebook, whatever, put the phone down. There's nothing they can do to you. You don't have to be concerned. And if you have real concern about the way you've been contacted, you can report it. But blocking will do an awful lot. And I think be aware that there's a lot of this around at the moment. As I say, every time you sit down and talk about it in Thailand, everybody's got stories, literally everybody.
Dominic Folda, thank you so much for coming on Asia Stream.
My pleasure.
That's it for Asia Stream this week. As always, I encourage you to head to Nikkei Asia at asia.nikkei.com for more in-depth coverage of scams in Southeast Asia and all things related to Asia. If you enjoy this podcast, please share, subscribe, and leave us a review and hopefully a 5-star rating. And a last reminder that Nikkei Asia is currently offering an exclusive discount for our podcast listeners. To get the discount, just click the link in the episode description. This episode was produced by Monica Hunter-Hart and Alice French. I'm your host, Waj Khan. We'll stream again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, be on scam alert. You don't want to find yourself caught up in a pyramid stream. Happy Thanksgiving.